I guess we'll start. I believe we're on page 28 here as we start our second shir, at least for this session on Shari Halacha. So we're on page 28. So last week we talked about tzitzis. I'm sure the women are very interested in this.
Yes.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. So we talked about the mitzvah tzitzis, the importance of the mitzvah tzitzis. We talked about a big talus, a little talus, talus katan, talus gadol, we talked about how one has to check the tzitzis before you put them on. We talked about how to check the tzitzis.
Shabbos also,
you have to check the tzitzis. You cannot tighten them. You could check them.
Hair. Huh? You just wear a different pair. I'm thinking of David, actually.
Just wear a different pair.
Yeah.
Well, see, the truth of the matter is it's a little interesting. In other words, some people, if let's say they put on a pair of tzitzis Friday afternoon and they check them, say they took a shower and then they put on a different pair of tzitzis and they check them, so then they're not so big about checking them Shabbos morning because there's it's such a short, relatively short period of time. So then you don't have to worry about checking it. But what I was talking about is, like a talus. I was thinking of a talus. But you're right. As far as what we call talus katan, if you checked it Friday afternoon, so then you would not have to check it necessarily Shabbos morning for that short period of time. You don't assume something snaps, something... Again, the other thing is that the tzitzis get tangled, so that also, there's two reasons why you check it. One is, the main reason is to make sure nothing snapped around the hole. The other reason is to separate the strings. So again, if you do that Friday, you don't really have to do it Shabbos morning. Again, one of the reasons people have requested this year is that sometimes people, it's not only to know the halachas, some people are Bali too, but don't know the little
nuances.
So one of the nuances we talked about last week is like how to check tzitzis. So we showed how you like keep it as a square, put it on your shoulder, and then you could look through each of the four. So that was again one of the purposes of the shir, is to get one of those nuances, as Mr. Cohn just said, to people's psyche. Now that brings us to page 28. Number 14. Now, we'll go through this very quickly because it talks about how to make tzitzis. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Well, maybe. Well, we'll see. I assume we'll go through it quickly, but with this group, you never know. Mr. Harrison, you want to read for us? Okay. Just speak up a little because you're far away from the mic. Mr. Cohn, maybe move a little closer so everybody can move a little closer. That way. Thank you. Even though it's high output, but still, you never know. Check.
No flanker to the left.
Yeah, it should be fine. 14.
Thank you.
Instructions on how to prepare the tzitzis. 14 is A, insert four tzitzis strings through one of the four holes in the corners of the garment. Eight strings now hang from the corner of the garment.
See, right, a lot of people, they look at one of the tzitzis, and people think there are eight strings. That's not true. There's four strings. It's just, when you take four long strings, we'll see a little later, one of the four strings is called a shamus. It's much longer than the other three, and you put it, those four strings through the hole, then you line it up on each side of the hole. So now you have eight, but really it's only four strings. Right? A lot of people don't know that. I don't know what they think, but that's the way it is. Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay. One of the four strings should be longer than the others, which you just said. This string is called the shamash. Before inserting the strings into the hole of the garment, one should explicitly state that he is about to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis.
Shem kedusha tzitzis.
Only a guy can make tzitzis? Only a guy can make tzitzis?
As far as I know, I have to look at it. Women might be able to also, but usually... But then, we'll see. This is because... Oh, yeah. So you have to have a mind... You should say it. that it, you're doing this for the mitzvah tzitzis and, you know, put it through.
This is because the tzitzis must be hung, knotted, and wound for the express purpose of the mitzvah. 15. There are various customs regarding the number of times the strings are wound. The following method is one, is the one described by the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. B. Take the four strings hanging from one side of the hole in one hand, and the four strings hanging from the other side with the other hand, and tie two knots with them.
All right, so you have the four strings, right, put through the hole. Mm-hmm. You can picture this. Should have brought it, but I don't have any. But you put it through the hole. Okay, I got four strings on each side, right? Then you make a double knot.
Okay.
Okay, you imagine this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, make a double knot. That's this. That's this thing. That's the first one closest to the hole. That's the first double knot. Okay. Make a double knot. Okay? Then.
C. Take the shamash and wind it around the seven other strings seven times. Once again, make two knots with the two groups and four strings.
Okay? Now, you see that. So you take the shamash. Imagine one of the strings is much longer. You make a double knot. Then you go around seven times. That's this. That's the first section. Then you make another double knot. Believe it or not, this is enough. If you just have that, that's enough to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay? It was brought down by Hilchos Shabbos. It's right before Shabbos. You don't have tzitzis. You don't have time to do all of them. So you just do that amount. The first knot, the space, and the second double knot. And then you do it on all four, and then you could wear them technically. Look kind of interesting, but, you know, people will notice. Okay, so everybody got what we got so far. Mm-hmm. So we have the first double knot, we have the seven twines, and then the second double knot, as you see over here, as I'm pointing to. Now, D.
D. Now wind the shamash around the other strings eight times and make two knots as before. Wind the shamash around the other strings 11 times, make another two knots. Wind the shamash around 13 times and make two more knots.
Right. So that's what you have. He says 8, some say 9 for the second one. Then 11, see here, this is 11 times around. And over here, this is 13. Mm-hmm. With a double knot after each compartment. Once you get the hang of it, it's pretty easy to do. My main problem is holding them, so I have like one of my daughters hold it as I go around, you know. But if you have somebody holding it, then it's much easier to go around. If you're doing it solo, it's kind of... But that way, my daughters get a piece of the mitzvah. But again, okay, E.
When finished, the tzitzis will have five double knots with four spaces in between them where the shamash is wound around the other threads 7, 8, 11, and 13 times. This process is repeated for each corner of the garment.
Right, because obviously, you finish one, you still got three more to do, right? But that's what it is, right? As I said before, 7, either 8 or 9, 11, 13. That's what it is. And it's, once you've seen it a couple times, or not, it's not that hard to do, really. Another valid method?
My page flip.
Yeah, 20.
Another method designates winding the shamash around 10, 5, 6, and 5 times, which is the numerical value of each of the letters of the sacred four-letter name of Hashem.
Right, Yud, He, and a Vav, and a He. So some people do that. We usually do it the first way. We do it the first way. But like you said, the Mishnah Berurah. What?
Is it better if a man ties his own tzitzis?
As opposed to buying it in the store? Yeah, because you're doing the mitzvah. Also, there are certain times, you know, it comes out better than the commercially made ones usually. Okay, we'll discuss. Sometimes there's certain things on tzitzis, which I don't know if I want to get into. Some people want. Like, for example, I like doing my own. Besides doing my own, is also, there's a thing in halacha that they should be, it's complicated, but basically they should be, the tzitzis should hang off the side, not down. So
you need to tie it to the side.
Yes, you have to tie it to the side. Also, in addition to that, if you want to do, what I like to do is I like to make the loop that goes through the first time, this loop that goes through the hole, I like to make it tight. We'll learn later that there's supposed to be a certain amount, we're going to get to it, a certain amount between the edge of the garment and the whole. The whole is has to be precisely stationed. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But if you crunkle up the, so it still is okay. In other words, we look at the garment when it's unfurled. So the reason why I make this loop tight is that it doesn't hang down. It hangs off to the side. So you won't find that usually in commercially made tzitzis. Be like this, which is fine. It doesn't make the if it's hanging off the bottom, hanging towards the bottom, if you can imagine that, hanging towards the bottom, it doesn't make the tzitzis putzel. So it's just nice, you know, it's better that way.
Do the fringes on the edges have anything to do with it?
The fringes on the edge is actually very interesting. He does not discuss it, I don't think. But it's, you're an observant person, so Mrs. Friedman's asking why the bells, whatever. So if you do notice, there's no bells by the corner. Now, the reason I believe that we have these is because in the old days, when they loomed things, it didn't come out straight or even. So things would be sometimes like a little unfinished. So this is what they did. They tied off and made these like little bells and looks cool. Now the only problem is that when you get towards where the tzitzit is supposed to be, where the hole is, if you would have these bells continuing, the question would be, where does, we're gonna get to it soon. Where's the hole go? Does it go from the edge of the garment or the end of the bell? Everybody understand what I'm saying? It might be hard and internet land to understand. But that's why if you look at Talesim, big or small, they avoid the question and the area around the corner of each of the four corners does not have the bells. That way, we measure the hole from the edge of the garment and there's no problem. But why do we still do it this way? We do it this way because they did it for hundreds of years. That's the way it came out. So, you know, we don't throw out, well, that's kind of nice. I do remember, I don't want to get into a story that much, I do remember a case where I saw a house with no bells, none of these things that on the edge. Mm-hmm. That was years ago. I have relatives in Russia. It was during that time in Russia, and my father Shalom received a letter from one of his cousins that, it had to be written very cryptically, obviously, that I remember when this happened, I was a little boy, that he had a relative who was dying and his last wish was to be buried in a talus. Now the problem was getting a talus there. So my parents, my mother, Shalom and be well, and my father Shalom, came up with this idea. They called got in touch with a talus factory in New York. They made a talus with no bells, no nothing, and no stripes. So if you could picture it, it was just a piece of garment, a big piece of garment. I think it had the holes, but it just looked like a piece of wool. And they had it specially made. And then my mother took spools of thread, unraveled them and wound the tzitzis underneath and then put the colored thread on top of it. Right. So in other words, it looked like a regular spool of thread. Okay. But underneath the spool, each spool, there was like, I don't know how many spools of thread they sent, but underneath each spool there was, on the bottom of each spool there was tzitzis. One string. One string. And then they declared it as, a sewing material. And they sent it to Russia. It took a long time. And they were figuratively holding their breath for the whole time. But then, a while later, they got a letter back saying, thank you very much for the package. We enjoyed putting together the shawl. Mm-hmm. That was very nice. And it served its purpose. I think the person passed away around the time they got it. Mm-hmm. So I remember that. I remember the whole subterfuge going on there. Again, I was a very little boy, but I remember the story very well. So, but again, in classic cases, besides the Fusnik cases, you know, the customs we don't throw out so quickly. So even though we don't really need it, but still, you know, that's the way it goes. Okay.
16. The
sits, yeah, sorry.
The sitzes look better if the windings appear equal in length. So one should try to make the first two windings slightly more spread apart and the last two windings closer together.
Okay, so you understand what he's saying. I find that hard to do. So in other words, he's saying you should space these, the first compartment of seven, you should space them out wider than you do for the last one, which is the 13 times around. That way, each of the compartments, each of the four compartments look equal. I'm not good enough at doing that, but you can understand the concept. The concept is would hypothetically look nicer. Okay.
Yeah.
Now again, that would not mess up the mitzvah, right? Differentiate between what's nice, what you got it, right? I'm sorry.
17. The length of the sitzes from the knot closest to the garment to the end of the sitzes should be at least 12 agudalim.
Right.
According to the
An agudal is a thumb.
Okay. According to the cousin Ish, the minimum length is 30 centimeters, 11.8 inches, or at least 29 centimeters, or 11.4 inches. According to Rav Chaim, the minimum length is 24.5 centimeters, or 9.65 inches. The sitzes look best when the knots and the windings measure approximately one-third of the length of the sitzes, i.e. 4 hagdulim, and the hanging strings measure two-thirds of the length, i.e. 8 hagdulim. If the strings are longer than 12 hagdulim, the knots and the windings should be spread apart so that they still measure one-third of the entire length.
So that's what we basically do. In other words, the question is we'll get to it later, what happens if it's shorter? But the tzitzis preferably should be about 12 inches, right? That's basically every from first knot to the end.
If it snaps right? Somewhere in the middle of the string.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Now, but the best thing is that the compartments should be a third, and this two-thirds, which you see happen here. Actually, it's the tail, so to speak, is longer, but that's fine. But that's just, again, it should be 12 inches, but preferably it should be one-third and two-thirds, right, which is what you have here. And you can see, right, just about a third, and this would be and the tail should be about two-thirds. Again, if it's shorter than that, as long as it's 12 inches, it's fine. And it's just best, if possible, right? We're differentiating between halacha and best. Best, it should be one-third and two-thirds. Okay.
When making tzitzis for the first time, it is advisable to get practical instruction from an experienced person due to the details involved.
Right. I remember when I was in elementary school, our first Gemara, Rabbi Stepan, was in the valley for a long time, but he taught us how to make tzitzis. And I remember, it sticks in your mind. So again, sometimes you need a little practice. But again, it's like anything else. You need somebody to show you. It goes a lot faster. Okay, next.
The garment of a talis. 18. The Shulchan Aruch maintains that according to the Torah, woolen garments require sitzes, while garments which are made from materials such as cotton only require sitzes due to a rabbinical decree. Those who follow this opinion are particular that both their talis katan and their talis gadol be made of wool, so that they are fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah rather than a rabbinic decree. The Ramah, Rav Moshe, Israelis. It maintains that the Torah requires sitzes on four-cornered garments, regardless of what material the garment is made of.
Right, and the Vilna Gaon goes this way. So the Ramah, right, who Ashkenazim usually follow, and also the Vilna Gaon say that any garment, so if you have a cotton garment, so then a cotton garment still requires sitzes from the Torah, right? Everybody agrees that at least rabbinically, but you know, we'd rather do a mitzvah that, you know, if you had your druthers, that is from the Torah, if possible.
Halachically, you can is it men only?
Or? Make the tzitzis or make the garment. Anybody can make the garment. The tzitzis, well, there's a whole discussion, believe it or not, who, but tzitzis have to be made lishma by a Jew. We'll get to it. So again, but don't get confused. Here we're not talking about the strings. We're talking about the garment. Okay, so the question is, what material the garment, right, the garment, not the tzitzis, the garment should be made out of. So again, according to the Mechaber, it should be a wool in order to fulfill from the Torah. According to the Rama and the Vilna Gaon, it could be made out of cotton, and it's still required from the Torah. Garment.
So granted, it's usually cotton, but there's...
Could be cotton, could be wool, could be silk. It could be, right?
Holes in it. You know what I mean? It's more like graph paper with little holes.
Oh, yeah, the fishnet ones?
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't know recently, but they used to be made out of polyester.
But if it was made, let's say, in wool, it would be okay.
Well, yes. See, the problem with those sisters is two. Number one is they used to be made out of polyester, so then the question is polyester a garment? So we've asked the Shiloh. Some people are machmir on it, but one big posuk I spoke to said, yeah, it's made out of threads. Other people say no, because it's, I think polyester is from an oil base, right, original.
Yeah, it's a polymer. It's not a plant.
Right. So the other problem with it, so that is the material. The other problem is it's part of the plan, whereas it's holy. In other words, so is it mostly fabric or is it mostly air? That's the problem. So, you know, they're very comfortable, but, I mean, I don't know, I don't remember if I ever wore them. I'm not sure.
They don't make them in wool.
They don't?
I've never seen people. I've seen these.
I personally found that they're, it's,
like it's so
it gets hotter because it doesn't breathe as well.
Because it's probably polyester.
Yeah.
It might be polyester. See, but we're going to get into this later. Also, when you're buying, let's say, that not the wool ones, but even if you're buying the cotton one, the regular ones, the non-holy ones, regular tzitzis, but still you have to look because, again, based upon what we're learning now, let's say some tzitzis you buy, the non-wool ones, are a cotton polyester blend. So then you get into the same argument about are polyester tzitzis, going back to polyester, is that a fabric? Again, the angle to say yes is because it's made out of threads. The angle to say no is like Mr. Kahn was saying, but it's not a fabric. So then to take a little further, how about if I have a cotton polyester blend? So that's why a lot of people try when you buy non-wool tzitzis to buy 100% cotton. So again, according to the Vilna Gaon and the Rama, those tzitzis will be chayav, be obligated in tzitzis from the Torah. Again, there's opinions to rely upon if you get the cotton polyester blend. I'm not saying it's trafe.
What about if it's wool, I don't know if this exists, if it's wool and they blend in some lighter fabric?
They don't do it. Okay. But again, because the whole idea is if you want to wear wool, you want to go according to those opinions that say, not the Vilna Gaon, not the Rama, that say wool is the only one, size linen, that's higher from the Torah. What they do is for people who want to wear wool, they try to make the wool thinner.
Yes, I know.
And that's what they try to do. So, we're not talking about black stripes, white stripes, you know, no stripes, yes stripes, leaving that aside. We're just talking about, stay focused on the... Okay, so that's the garment. 19 talks about the tzitzis.
Okay. 19. Woolen tzitzis are suitable for all garments, regardless of what material they are made from. The exception to this rule is linen garments, to which special laws apply.
Right, so again, so now let's put both together. So you have the garment and you have the tzitzis. So let's say you have a cotton garment for tzitzis. So then the strings should be wool. Now there's a discussion about could it be cotton, but they couldn't be anything else. So basically, practically today, all of our tzitzis strings are made out of wool. That's what they're made out of. I don't know. Let's say the silk tzalesim. You know, you see reform or conservative people. I don't know what the tzitzis. I have a feeling the tzitzis are probably wool. But again, the exception would be if you had a linen garment and, right, this, I could picture somebody wanting to do this today, having a linen garment, then you could not put wool tzitzis on it. And you all know why, because of shatness, the mixture of wool and linen. In the time when they had the chalazon, now again, they were not discussing that in the Sharia Halacha, but you do know that really, from the Torah, there's supposed to be tchelas. Tchelas is a secretion from a creature called chalazon, which we don't know today. Some people say they found it, and some people say they haven't found it. But leaving that aside, so you know that, well, it's machlokas of the Rambam and Rashi. One or two of the strings would be a blue color. And a lot of times the twinings here would be blue. It would be cool. It would be blue and white. So, you know, so if you had the chalazon and you dyed the requisite strings blue, and then, believe it or not, there's a whole sugya about this, the whole discussion, but you could wear wool tzitzis on a linen garment, because that would be the mitzvah from the Torah. Have, but we don't have that, so therefore we can't do it. Therefore, you can't have a linen garment with wool tzitzis now that we don't have the chalazon. So basically, what our options are: a cotton garment with wool tzitzis, which the Vilna Gaon says, as we saw before, and the Rambam says, you fulfill the mitzvah from the Torah doing that. Again, the other opinion is no, you need wool or linen garment, but you have wool tzitzis, so that's why you see people walking around with a wool talus, and the small talus, the talus cottons, also you see people wearing wool. You don't see it unless they're wearing it out like Hasidim do, but you know, sometimes you could tell if somebody's wearing wool because you see the racing stripes peeking out from under their shirt, so then you know they're wearing wool. They don't make that on the cotton ones. Now again, somebody could be wearing wool tzitzis and not have the racing stripes. They could just be wearing white racing stripes, right? So then you won't know if they're wearing wool. Okay, but anyways, be that as it may.
Tzitzis made of a material other than wool may only be used for a garment made of the same kind of material, i.e. cotton tzitzis can only be used on a cotton garment, etc.
Right, so I think we mentioned that, right?
Okay. The mitzvah of tzitzis does not only apply to a talis katan or a talis gadol. Any garment requires tzitzis if it has four corners, opens at the sides or the back, and is open for more than half of its length, e.g. a poncho.
Right. So again, it's what he's skirting around here is, how about if there's hooks? Or let's say there's buttons, you know? But actually, when I was a little boy, tzitzis innovation was coming up, and they had it recently also. It comes back every once in a while. A undershirt tzitzis. You know, so problem was those tzitzis were puzzle because they were an undershirt and they had a little cut, so they had the four corners and then they had tzitzis. The problem was, a little cut's not good enough. It has to be mostly open along the side. This was mostly closed. So I don't know who, but after a little while, the company went out of business because everybody knew they were Amaranson. But again, a poncho would be a good example. Poncho would be good. That's like the only thing I could really think of. Maybe like a raincoat, but a raincoat usually is... You don't have four corners. You have to have two in front and two in back. So you don't, you don't usually have it. A shawl, I don't know. Although the Machaber talks about a shawl, but you know, that's...
In the back of a lot of rooms.
You're saying thing of
those. There's like those two corners.
What?
You can make a pleat in the back of an overcoat. There can be those two corners.
Oh, so you weren't here last week, sorry. I don't think. We talked about a capato last week. We'll get to that. Hold on one second. We'll discuss it in a second.
If you had a rain jacket that really had four corners, but it was made out of like a polyester,
right?
Then that's
right. It would not need a plastic. Like
plastic,
I have.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife brought back for me the latest fashion in Borough Park. It's a slicker, you know, rain. It's made out of plastic, but it has a hood that comes out of the, but it's an oversized hood to fit over your strimal or your spodek. Or your hat. It doesn't work so well with me because I think it's really made for a spodek, and it, like, it's too big for the hat. Even if you wear a wide brim hat, it's like very big. But the concept is a cute concept. But yeah, so on, on that rain slicker, I would not have to wear tzitzis. Because it's made out of plastic. It's not a fiber. If it was a fiber, then you might get into a problem. Depending, again, if it had, but the case like we discussed last week was a kapata. So that's what we're going to bring up right now. If one does not want to wear tzitzis.
If one does not want to put tzitzis on these garments, you should round off one of the corners.
Right.
It is not enough to fold the corner and sew it down so that it appears to be round. The corner must be cut to exempt the garment from the requirement of tzitzis.
Right. I like that. So that's what they do. That's what they do with a kapata. So all these Rosh Hashivas are walking around, or a big Rabbanim, are walking around with a four-corner garment, but it doesn't have a corner. They purposely, you don't see it like I mentioned last week because of the fold in the back of the fold. But I remember one time I looked at the Rosh Hashiva's kapata, and it's actually, yeah, it was round. You're like, one of the, it doesn't have four corners.
You cut it and then you finish it.
Well, they manufacture it that way.
It's like it's stylish.
The Rebbetzin didn't have to do it. They make it that way. So, yeah. So, it's an interesting thing. 20.
According to the Chazon Ish, the distance between the hole for the tzitzis and the edge of the garment, not the diagonal from the corner, should be 4 to 7 centimeters, or 1.6 to 2.75 inches,
mm-hmm.
and preferably between 4.5 and 6 centimeters, or 1.8 to 2.3 inches.
So now we're discussing again what David's getting into right now, is where do we put this hole? Where does the hole go? Because the Torah says it has to be on the corner, not. And the Gemara goes through this. It doesn't mean on the corner, meaning right at the corner, but they learn out from the language of the that means close to the corner. So what's close? Close, but not too far. So that it's exactly this size. So there's a distance. So now again, when we say this distance, it's not a diagonal, it's a right angle, right? That's the way we do it, right? It's the intersection. So it's, let's say, right? Let's say like 2.5 inches from one side and one side, and then where do they intersect? That's where we put the hole. That's where the hole has to go, okay? According to Rav Chaim Noah, oh, you did that?
According
right.
to the Rav Chaim Noah,
right.
The distance should be 3.5 to 6 centimeters or 1.4 to 2.3 inches and preferably 4 to 5 centimeters or 1.6 to 2 inches.
Right.
If the tzitzis were initially inserted in the hole at the required distance from the edge and later the hole tore, causing the distance to become smaller, the tzitzis may still be used. It is advisable to reinforce the stitching around the hole and the edge of the garment.
Okay, you see that? Okay, now, a lot of people don't know that. If the hole rips, now there's a whole bir halacha about like how much could it rip. Well, let's say it just rips a little. The tzitzis are still good, even though the hole rip. But because we're worried about ripping, the halacha brings down that we reinforce it. So now you really get a little more insight into every little thing on tzitzis, right? We have this. They make these things, right? And Talskol as a reinforcement. And if you look closely at the tzitzis, at the hole. If you look closely, you'll see that there's reinforced stitching going around the hole. So you have this piece of reinforced material behind the hole backing, like usually like it's about 3-4 inches, I don't know. And then also the hole itself right over here, is there's reinforced stitching going all the way around. That's why we do it. Because even though if it rips, it still could be okay. Why should we have it rip? So this way they put these things in and hopefully it does not rip. Okay.
The fringes of the tzitzis. 21. The fringes of the tzitzis should be specially spun and interwoven for the purpose of being used as tzitzis. This is derived from the verse, "You shall make for yourself bound tassels." Devarim 22:12.
Tassels. I keep on saying tail, but tassels is a good word actually. Yeah.
Tassels. which our sages interpret as meaning, you shall make for yourself for the sake of fulfilling the obligation to wear tzitzis. Therefore, one should be careful to buy tzitzis which bear reliable certification that they were spun and interwoven as required by halacha.
Okay. Now, there is a chumra, which some people, there's a previous, see, talking about spun and interwoven. Oh, maybe I should explain what interwoven means. Each of the strings is made, each of these strings is made up of a bunch of smaller strings. Mm-hmm. You could see, right? You could see they're spun here, see? Mm-hmm. So they're, each of these strings is made up of a bunch of smaller strings. They're twisted together. So it could be four, a lot of times it's eight little strings, believe it or not, put together. And we'll get to this later. Sometimes we know they start to unravel, right? Okay? So that's what we mean, that it should be spun and also it should be interwoven. Now there's a step before it when they comb, it's called nipus, when they comb the wool. Now that's a previous step before spinning and interweaving. So that far we don't go. We don't say that it has to be combed for the sake of tzitzis. Believe it or not, there is a minority opinion that says that even the combing should be done for the sake of tzitzis. There aren't too many that I knew of. There's only like I know Chust in New York. They comb the material, the wool, for the sake of tzitzis. Also, there's places in Israel. So some people are machmir. Again, this is clearly a chumrah, that the niputz should also be done for the sake of tzitzis. Again, most opinions don't go that way, but still, you have to be aware that that's why people look for a hashgacha on tzitzis. Like, I'm not eating it, like, what's the big deal? Answer is because we want to make sure that the tzitzis were processed. For the sake of making tzitzis. Okay? Here we go, 22. This is what we're talking 22. About.
If part of this of a string becomes fully unraveled, that part is considered as if it tore off. Therefore, if the thread's twining is loose, some people knot the end of the string to prevent it from unraveling.
I don't have any. Oh! I don't know if I have any, because these are pretty good. But, see, things like this start happening to them. They start unwinding. And internet lines, sometimes if you pull, like I'm doing now, they go back and the little things go away. See, like, if you look here, see that it's beginning to unravel? So a lot of times if you just pull it, it goes back into shape. Right? See, like mine did. But sometimes, this is a nice tiles, the big tiles we have here, it starts fraying at the end. So what you can do is, you take it and you just make a little knot. And that will stop it from fraying more. The Mishnah Berurah brings down, some people did it as a preventive thing. The Mishnah Berurah, some opinions don't like that much because then you're adding knots. You know, it's not the same thing as the big knots, but still, some posts can say just do it when necessary, not as a preventative. But it seems like some people did it as a preventative. Again, so we're talking about at the end of the string making this little knot to make sure that that it doesn't unravel further. Okay? Now again, as you said, if it unravels, so it's considered it's not there, and we want one third and two thirds. We want two third tassel. So then it's considered like there, not there, so that, you know, that's not so good. Okay.
When I go to the Judaica store and buy tzitzit, there's usually two different price ranges. Like there's one that has a higher hashgacha.
It could be also, there could be a few things.
Okay.
Could be the quality of the garment. Okay. Could be the quality of the tzitzis. Okay. Could be, like I said before, it could be each string is made out of four. The more expensive one could be made out of eight. Like I said, it could be the quality. It could also be, is it machine made or handmade? Like you said before, it could be, maybe it could be that, let's say the tzitzis that are more expensive, maybe that previous step I talked about before, maybe they did that for the sake of tzitzis. There's a lot of different variables that could be, You have to read the little tag and see, like, they might tell you, they might not.
Handmade would be preferable.
Right, always preferable. When I was in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, there was, I don't know his name. His name was a tzitzis man. And he used to go from Yeshiva to Yeshiva, you know, somebody told me he was a very big Talmud Chacham. I have no reason to not think so. But he used to sell tzitzis. And then, you know, if you asked him for a little bit more, he would make it on the spot. He would, and like he could do it. Oh yeah, the guy was amazing. I remember we were in the year the Holy Yeshiva was in Israel, 1979, so there was a blackout. And he was making the tzitzis. Yeah, and he kept on going. It was like, no problem. So there's a whole discussion about making tzitzis at night, because nighttime, we'll see, there's a discussion whether nighttime is the time of tzitzis. If it's not the time of tzitzis, so can you make tzitzis then? But again, if you have a light, so then, there's definitely, like, I think I said a few years ago when we had discussed to go to Eretz Yisrael, so I met up with one of our nephews who was learning in the Mir, wanted to get some tzitzis. So, in Gula Mei Sharm, there's, so where should he go? So he took me to a store, and I was telling Kofi the Shabbos, you have to be ready to answer a lot of questions very quickly. Because, like, they ask you, if you're buying a small talus, a talus katan, so they ask you, you want an open neck, like we discussed last week, or you want a slit neck? You want one hole, meaning in the corner, or two holes? Hasidim a lot of times have two holes, and then they thread it through that. Do you want white stripes? Do you want black stripes? Do you want... and then I mentioned I wanted the niputz lishma. I wanted the ones that are processed earlier for the sake of this. And they start, what? How big? You want the regular size, or you want the chazonish size? Do you want you got to be ready to answer the questions, But again, that's what they ask you when you go into, you want the chazonish size, which is bigger, 18 inch or 24 inch, 22 inch. The garment itself would be bigger. And then again, do you want an open neck? Or you want a slit neck, with a V. So do you want one hole in the corners or two holes in the corners, right? Do you,
four twine what? Or eight twine.
So, right, they ask you all these things, and, So a lot of times people just walk in, I don't know, so they'll give you whatever. But if you know the answers, well, first of all, a lot of it is obviously personal desire, like a open neck or a V neck is one hole or two holes is a different custom. White stripes or black stripes, if it's wool, that's whatever you want. But you want to get what you want, so that's cute. It's really cute. All right, Vadeba, what are we up to now?
23.
Yes, sorry.
If only one of eight threads is torn below the knots, the tzitzis may still be used. If the string is torn above the knots, i.e., the part of the string which is in the hole of the garment, it may no longer be used.
Okay. So again, let's go back to our talus here. So we just cut. The tassel tore. Let's say, God forbid, this one string tore. Right. Let's say it tore there. This is happens often, unfortunately. The tzitzis are still okay. If one string tore. One string tore on the tail. I can't get out of an old habit. So it's okay. If, as we learned last week, one string tore over here, I'm pointing to where the strings go through the hole. If one of these broke here, it's possible. Right? That's what you're inspecting in the morning. To make sure that none of the strings, as they go through the hole, snap. Right, if somehow they snap, so that's a problem. Right, that's what you're inspecting in the morning, like we learned last week. And then you're separating and tightening, or not tightening on Shabbos, but that these are crucial. If they snap here, hasta luego. Right?
Would you go back to square one and be tight?
You take it out.
Yeah,
if it snapped here, there would be nothing. You'd have to get another set of tzitzis.
Right.
And do this one. You wouldn't need all four. You just need four. four new strings, one being a shamus, and replace this. But you have to replace it.
But the bag is fine.
Yeah, and the other three are all fine also, hypothetical. Yeah.
If two or more strings tear, several factors must be considered, and a rav should be consulted regarding whether the garment may still be used.
Okay, so now if two strings of the tassel broke, then it's a shiloh. Depends on how they were made. It's complicated. That's why he's staying away from it. It depends on how they made it, if they always kept the same four strings on the same side, or they weren't careful about it. It's complicated. But a lot of times we would say you should take it off and get a new one. If two strings snapped. Now, when we say snap, we'll see. I think it explains it. Yeah. Okay.
24.
Yeah.
As long as the sitzes are attached to the garment, they may not be used for any purpose, e.g. tying objects with them, since this is disrespectful of the mitzvah. Similarly, strings that were torn off or removed from a talis katan should not be treated disrespectfully. Some people go beyond the letter of the law and bury the strings like they bury holy books.
Right. Or the other possibility, and we see this in other mitzvahs also, is to use them for another mitzvah. The example used, I think Mishnah Berurah uses, is use them as a place mark, as a bookmark. That'd be one thing. Some people I saw somewhere used to use them as wicks for Hanukkah. Look, it's coming up soon. So in other words, an object of mitzvah which is unusable anymore, to use it for another mitzvah. You know, we have a lot of examples. Well, you could, I'm sure, remember the other example. Some people use their lulav to burn chametz with. Or I think the Marsham brings down, they used to use lulavim to use to burn, to make the fire to bake matzahs. That's a concept, that if you use something for a mitzvah and it's no longer usable for a mitzvah, and you can use it in conjunction with another mitzvah, so that's the best way to dispose of it or to use it, since it's unusable for its old... the example of this is the garments of the Kohanim, like the belt and things. So when they got worn, they used to use it for wicks in the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the foundational idea. So you know, we try to do that. Like I said, the lulav burning chametz example is another example of this. But again, you shouldn't treat them with disrespect after they're unusable. Again, it's been snapped and took one out. So you should dispose them properly, like bury it, or use it for another mitzvah. Okay, 25, something that comes up tomorrow.
25. The timetable below indicates the earliest time when one may recite the blessing on tzitzis. The blessing may not be recited before that time. The table is arranged according to the solar calendar, as these times depend on the solar year.
Right, so in other words, the issue is like this, like I mentioned briefly before. The question is, do we do the mitzvah tzitzis at night? Is nighttime and time for tzitzis? So there's a disagreement about that. There's machlokas. But we go that nighttime is night time of tzitzis. Now, we wear tzitzis at night because we always like to be reminded of all the mitzvahs, which was the first idea we discussed. But most people take off their tzitzis while they sleep. So now they put on a new in the morning. So the question is, when you do a mitzvah, as we learned many times before, make a bracha over the mitzvah. Making a bracha over a mitzvah, so if we say that nighttime is not the time of tzitzis, so then when can I make the bracha over the tzitzis? During the day. So what is that, sunrise? Before sunrise? So as you'll see in a second, the times listed?
The times listed are according to the Shulchan Aruch's opinion, 18.3, that one may recite the blessing on a talis when there is enough daylight to allow one to recognize an acquaintance from a distance of four amos, and when one is able to distinguish between sky blue and white. This is also the earliest time when tefillin may be put on, as explained in chapter 6, section 9. The times are cited at 10-day intervals. One can estimate the times for the days in between. The times are listed according to the standard time.
Okay, so if you look on the poll or outside, you see this is an issue this time of year for the 545 minute, because you could daven. You're supposed to, any day, you're supposed to stay Shmoneh Esrei, Shachar Shmoneh Esrei at sunrise. Some people that's difficult to do, depending on the time of year or depending on their job. People travel long distances, we know today, to their jobs, so they have to daven earlier. What's the earliest you could daven? Alos. When's the Alos? There's a time, the halachic time called Alos. Alos is usually, I don't know, depends what your opinion you want to go like, 60 minutes before sunrise, 72 minutes before sunrise. Usually we go 72 minutes before sunrise. So you could daven that early, b'diavad, but you can't make a bracha on talis and tefillin that early. The earliest time you can make a bracha on talis and tefillin is this time. The time where you could recognize an acquaintance from a distance of 4 amos. Now, when we talk about an acquaintance, it can't be somebody you know really, really well. Somebody you really, really know well, you probably recognize them even in dark. You could tell, you see that even when it's really dark outside, if you know somebody really well, you could tell by the way they walk. So it could still be dark, it could be night outside, and you could, so that's no indication. It has to be somebody like an in-between acquaintance, and you'd be able to recognize them from 4 amos away, that's about 8 feet, 9 feet. Okay? Now, that's what we call recognizing is yakir, is you recognize someone. So mishi yakir, that's a time of recognition. And so if you look on some of the charts we have, see one of the columns, there's two columns, mishiyakir. Mishiyakir means when you could distinguish someone from 4 amos away. That's the earliest time you could make the bracha on talis and tefillin. So if you look on there, I can't really read all, but I printed it out myself. So it says alos, that would be the first time. That's the earliest you could begin davening. Right? Is alos. Before that, you could still daven ma'ariv. A few weeks ago, right, Mr. Cohen, before we changed the clocks, we had to change the 5:45 minyan to 6 o'clock. Because 5:45 was too early. You could daven ma'ariv at 5:45. Then you're not allowed to. You shouldn't go to sleep and say, well, I'll wake up early, I'll daven ma'ariv. Because we know what happens. And halacha recognizes that. But this time of year, we have a different problem. Alos is about, I forgot what time it is, over there, like 5:16, what does it say? Oh, it would say over here, I'm sorry. Here's Mr. Taylor's things. Yeah, Alos is 5:16. 5:16, 5:20, in that range this week. So you can dive in after that time. Actually, before I came here, a couple hours ago, somebody called me from Hawaii. Believe it or not. They were on vacation in Hawaii, nobody from the shul, somebody from a different shul, and they have to be somewhere early. They want to know what's the earliest they could daven, what's the earliest they could make brachas on talis and tefillin. So this is exactly the issue. So you could see in any newspaper what time sunrise is in a given place. So then you go approximately 72 minutes before that. That's alos, that's when you could daven. But you can't. You could put on talis and tefillin, but you can't make a bracha on it. So when can you make a bracha? That is the mishiyakir. In fact, if you look at on the emissaries that they put out on Fridays, you see it says alos. Then the second thing is mishiyakir. It says earliest talis and tefillin. That's the time we're talking about now. So tomorrow will be like 5:43, 5:44, right? Then Nates is sunrise. So again, the earliest bidyev you could daven is alos. Then we have talis and tefillin bracha time. That's mishiyakir, recognizing time. Nates is the preferred time you should daven Shmoneh Esrei, which is sunrise. Okay? So that is a big issue now. Because like the guys who go to the 5:45 minyan tomorrow, it's right on the line now. Basically, a lot of the guys are going to be putting on, unless you can put on your talis and tefillin very quickly, they start exactly on time, thanks to atomic clocks, as we discussed before. So you only have a minute or two to put on your talis and tefillin with a bracha. Next week, it's going to be definitely a problem. So that's why we put up these signs for everybody to be aware that it's too early to make a bracha on talis and tefillin. Either put on your talis and tefillin really fast, or you put it on without a bracha. And then later on, maybe at the end of davening or somewhere, but you move them out of position, the shel yad and the shel rosh. Shel yad, make a bracha, put it back in position. Shel rosh, put it out of position, then make the bracha on it. You feel the tzitzis, or you wrap yourself in the tzitzis, if it's talis, make a bracha on it later. That's what guys are doing at the 5:45 minyan. This is an issue. So you could put, if you wake up early, like I don't know what time I was up this morning, 4:30, whatever it was, so you put them on without a bracha, but you can't make a bracha until you hit this time. That time fluctuates during different times of the year, as you could see. Okay? Okay, Belinair, we'll pick this up next week. We'll talk about tefillin. We'll get into tefillin next week.